Welcome, everyone, to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is having problems installing WebSphere Service Registry and Repository. Here are the gotchas. Today's presenter is Kevin Marsh. Kevin has worked for IBM for 10 years and in a lead support role for the past six. Kevin has performed roles in IBM services and has vast experience and understanding of how our clients are working with our SLA products. Kevin is currently responsible for Level 3 service and support for all versions and platforms of the WebSphere Service Registry and Repository set of products and has worked many installation-related PMRs. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Kevin. You may begin.
Thank you, David, and welcome to everyone for joining this session. Really, what I'm going to talk about today is just the concepts and issues to be aware of when you're doing a WSRR or WSR, as I'll probably refer to it mostly, installation, and trying to pick up some of the gotchas. What I'm not going to do is a little tutorial of every step you need to go through, and I would recommend that you go to the Info Center for the detailed information. But what I want to do today is just highlight the main concepts so that you're, when you're reading the Info Center, you're aware of them and you're aware of the potential problems that you might encounter. So we'll move on to slide two to begin with, please. Just going through the agenda, I've split it up into sort of four main sections here. The installing the software section, this is really just covers the extracting of the installation image and the running of IBM Installation Manager to get the application installed. This doesn't give you a deployed system at this stage, so we'll move on to the creating a profile section where we'll talk about how you create or augment profiles and how you get to a point of having a running system. We'll talk a bit about some special users, what they do, the authority and roles that are required for them. That's one of the things that can often catch people out. And then a section on databases, again, what's required, the structure of the WSR database, and things you need to think about when you're doing your database deployment. So if we move on to slide three now. What you get when you, you've either got the DVDs for the WSR application or you've downloaded the installation image from Passport Advantage is a number of different things. You get the actual WSR code at version 8.0.0.0, the GA level code. You get Installation Manager, or IM as I refer to it, version 1.5.2. You get WebSphere Application Server, or WAS, version 8.0.0.3, Business Space version 8.0.0.0. I'm not going to talk about the installation of Business Space in this presentation, but if people are interested, then certainly please let me know, because I think we could do a whole session on installing and configuring of Business Space for WSR. So as I say, that won't be covered in this presentation. And going back to what you get in the installation image, we also have a copy of DB2 Express, but this is solely for the use of the evaluation install, so I'm not going to talk about that any further in this presentation. So if we move on to slide four. Once you've got your DVDs or you've downloaded the installation image, you need to unpack it. And on Windows, should be no problem. You can just use an unzip tool, and it will just extract everything onto the file system. But if you're using a Unix system, and particularly if you're using AIX and you're using TAR, then please be aware that you must use GNU TAR version at least 1.14. If you fail to do this, then some of the long path names that we use within the installation image will be truncated, and you might not necessarily see an error at the point of untarring, but later on you can get all sorts of problems with missing files or truncated files, which can cause lots of difficult problems to resolve and to debug. So please make sure, as I say, particularly on AIX, and we've got instructions in the Info Center that talk about how to go and get GNU TAR if you're on AIX, but any system, please verify that you're on at least 1.14. So let's move on to slide five now. Once you've successfully expanded the installation image, You'll get a number of directories created, and I'm just going to summarize what they are and what they're for on this slide. So there's the IM directory, which contains an installation manager install kit. So this is just a package that allows installation manager to install itself, or if it already exists, then make use or potentially update an existing installation manager installation. We've got a repository directory. This contains all of the packages that I mentioned a couple of slides ago that are included with the installation image. That's where they all reside. There's the Launchpad directory. This contains the files needed to use the Launchpad. I'm sure many of you are familiar with the Launchpad user interface, which a lot of IBM products use. And WSA is no different to that. That also provides a Launchpad. We have a response files directory. This contains a single template response file for running Installation Manager in a command line mode, in a silent install mode, and we'll come on to that a bit more a bit later on. And there's also a DB scripts directory. This contains the database creation scripts, and we'll talk about those a bit more later on too. So we can move on to slide 6, please. So once you're successfully expanded, you've got the installation manager on your disk, you've got a number of options when you're doing an install, and I just want to summarize some of those here. You could be doing a completely clean install where you're installing everything from scratch and you've got nothing already installed beyond your operating system, and that's absolutely fine. As I say, everything you need is provided on the DVD image, but quite likely you already have some things installed on the system already. For example, you might have IM already existing and want to be using that. You've already installed other products with it. You want to use it to install WSOR. So it's quite likely that will already be there. And it might be that you have WAS version 8 already installed and you want to use that to install WSOR into. Again, that's fine. Just be aware of, you know, that you need to think about these options. You might be installing on a cluster node. In any situation where you're deploying across multiple nodes, either you've got a federated server or you've got a cluster install, you need to install the WSA application or run the WSA install steps through IM on each of the nodes involved in your cell, or at least in the nodes that are involved in running WSA. And that's something that people don't necessarily understand, but you must do it. Otherwise, you can get sort of different problems occurring later on. You also need to consider whether you want to do a graphical user interface installation or a silent installation. Obviously, production systems very often don't have access to a user interface, so the silent install is usually required. And there's obviously different steps for how you go about doing that. You also need to consider root versus non-root, or in the case of Windows, administrator versus non-administrator installs. Again, this kind of depends on what you want to do in your specific organization, but you do need to consider upfront whether you want a root or non-root install. And if you're already using a deployed installation manager or you're already using a deployed WebSphere application server, then you need to be using the same type of user that has installed those already. So if you've got a root install of Installation Manager and you've got a root install of WAS, then you really need a root install of WSA as well. And also, one last thing, which is less relevant to install, but certainly very relevant to update, is whether you're doing an offline install. Again, production systems rarely have access to the internet, so there's some different steps you might need to take if you're trying to apply updates and you're in offline mode. And don't have access to the online update repositories. And we'll talk about those a little bit later on as well. So let's move on to slide 7. So if you've chosen the graphical user interface install, things are pretty straightforward, really. You invoke the Launchpad executable, which is actually located in the root of the installation image, not actually under the Launchpad directory that I mentioned earlier. The launchpad.bat or .sh files are whether you're on a Unix-style system or Windows, what you need to run. And it'll basically take you through a wizard, which will offer you links to the info center. It will offer you installation steps for however you are installing, really, whether you're using an existing WAS, whether IAM already exists, and it will walk you through, and you should find that that's fairly straightforward. Again, you can install everything either from scratch or make use of existing installations through that approach. And there's not really much more to say about the GUI. It should be fairly self-explanatory. There are, again, steps in the info center that describe all of the different parameters that you need to provide during installation. And these should be, you know, fairly clear from what you see as you move through the wizard. So moving on to slide 8. So this is the silent install, and this is where things become a bit more interesting, and you need to sort of take more care, really. It's very common, again, as I said, for production systems to want to use a scripted or a command line-based install, and that's what the silent install lets you do. The installation options are all defined in an IAM response file, and that's the file I mentioned earlier in the response files directory of the installation image. You can see the path there. The template needs to be customized. It obviously just contains all the information that that is needed to install the product, but you need to customize that to fit your particular system, whether it's file paths, the names of the package groups you want to install into. And as I said on the slide there, the response file defines, first of all, the repositories that IAM is going to use to pick up the installation packages that you're trying to install, so things like WAS, WSA, and Business Space, for example. It also defines the package group to which you're going to install. You may well be familiar, if you've already used IAM, off the concept of package groups, or they're known as profiles in the response file. But these are just the sort of named entities that you can install products into. And also the last thing in the response file is the offerings to be installed. So again, the offerings are just really the products that you want to install. So this is where you define whether you're actually installing WAS, whether you're installing WSA on top of WAS, and whether you're installing Business Space on top of WAS as well. So let's move on to slide 9 now. So the DVD contains the version 8.0.0.0 GA code level. But we've already released Fix Pack 1, which obviously wouldn't be included in what you've downloaded from Passport Advantage or is on the DVD. So you might want to install directly to the first Fix Pack. If you've got internet access, that's fine. That's pretty easy. You just need to add a repository entry to the response file, the template response file that you're using with IAM. And I've listed the repository on this slide. And once you've added that, as I say, if you've got internet access, then when you run the install, IAM will simply find the latest version of Service Registry that it can find. At the moment, that's Fix Pack 1 on version 8. But, you know, no doubt we will be releasing other Fix Packs later in the year. And it will automatically pick those up from that location. But, of course, in reality, it's unlikely a production system has access to the internet. So in order to get the repository that contains the Fix Pack that you want to install directly to, you can download it from Fix Central. And what you get is a zipped up Fix Pack. It's really just a IAM repository. And you extract that onto your file system, somewhere IAM can access it. And you add the repository.config file contained within it to the list of repositories. So where I've got the location on the repository entry for the online repository. You simply replace that with a local file system entry for the repository.config that you've downloaded from Fix Central. And then when you run the installer, it will install straight to the latest Fix Pack of WSA. We're moving on to slide 10. So you're basically ready to go at this stage. IAM might already be installed, and if it is, that's no problem. When you run the installer, IAM will detect whether it already exists. If it does, it will update itself if the installed level is back level from what WSA needs to install. But if it's if the installed version is fine, then it will just leave it and run the installation steps with that installation. However, if you've already got WAS 8 installed and you you want to use the existing WAS 8 install and install into the package group that that WAS 8 is defined in, then you need to remove the entry in the response file which defines the offering for WAS so that you don't attempt to install it a second time. And I've listed the offering entry in this slide. You can see that the profile there is essentially the package group, and then the ID is the actual offering that is to be installed, and it just says that's WASND version 8. And if we remove this line from the response file, then WAS 8 won't be installed, and you can use the existing one. But you would have to make sure that you're using the package group for or the profile for an existing Web Server Application Server install for the WSA entry. So, as I said earlier, you'll have three or potentially three entries for your offerings. You'll have WSA, WAS, and Business Space. You'd remove the WAS entry, leaving you with a WSA and a Business Space entry, and you'd have to make sure that the profiles for WSA and Business Space match the existing profile for WAS. So you'd need to know what that was, just to make you aware of that. So let's move on to slide 11. So once you've extracted everything and you've modified your response file, you need to run the actual install command. And this is where it matters whether you're an administrator or root or a non-administrator or a non-root user. For root installs, please use the install C command that's in the WSA DVD, the installation image, under the IM directory. And for non-administrators, use the user int C command. The full command's available in the info center with the exact usage for the parameters and so on. And I recommend you go and have a look there for the details. But I just wanted to draw your attention to the fact that at this stage, you need to be aware which one you're using. So let's move on to slide 12. So once the installation is complete, you've got a WAS install that contains a WSA directory in the WAS home directory. But you've got no profiles installed at this point, and this is a really key point to make. The installation steps and running IM simply lays down files on the WAS file system, which will be used by steps later on to actually deploy a working application that you can then interact with and run with. You can create the profiles necessary to deploy your WSA instance using the WebSphere customization toolbox. This is the version 8 name of the profile management tool that you might be familiar with. Or you can use the manage profiles command if you want to do, a command or a scripted install to either create or augment a profile. I'm generally going to talk about profile creation in this presentation. Profile augmentation is simply the same process, but when applied to an existing profile, the end result will be essentially the same. So when I say create, you can usually substitute the word augment as well. So let's move on to slide 13. So there's three types of WSA profile that can be created. The simplest is the standalone profile. And this is something you tend to use in a non-production environment where you simply wanted to deploy a single server. No deployment manager, no sort of extra complexity like that, just a single server running a single instance of the application, of the service registry product. And the nice thing about the profile creation for the standalone server is that everything is deployed for you. Whereas once you're moving on to a sort of more realistic production system, you'll be using a combination of a deployment manager profile and a custom profile, almost certainly you're going to be running with a cluster. And you'd create your cluster by having a deployment manager and then a number of custom nodes on which you'd have cluster member servers. And you'd be then having to deploy WSA onto that cluster, which I'll talk about a bit more in a moment. So let's move on to slide 14. As I say, with the standalone profile, the application and the service registry bus, just a quick aside on the bus, you do need one bus per cell. So when we deploy on a standalone server, the bus will be created on that server as well. You have options later on for in a more complicated install to exactly where you want the bus. But you get everything that WSA needs gets installed, and all the configuration parameters are supplied at runtime at install time. Creation augmentation time. The nice thing about it, particularly if you're using a local DB2 database, I think possibly the other databases as well, is that it can create the database at the same time. Typically, though, again, it's unlikely that you're going to be doing that in any kind of production system. And so we'll cover the steps for creating the database manually a bit later on. With the managed servers and the deployment manager and the custom nodes, the Celeron nodes will be created, but nothing is deployed to them. So you have to run some more steps to get the service registry application and the service registry bus installed. And we'll talk about that a bit later on as well. So let's move on to slide 15. To create a profile, you can use the WebSphere customization toolbox. And as I mentioned, it's really the profile management tool with a new name. And it lives in WASM, bin profile management, wct.bat.sh. And you can use this in a very similar way to using the launchpad to install using a graphical wizard, which will take you through, ask you the relevant information that you need to provide. It's really just a guided set of steps for creation or augmentation of profiles. And again, there's not much more to say. Please refer to the Info Center for the details of the individual parameters that you need to provide. But just be aware that the GUI exists, and if you're able to use it, then it's certainly one of the easier ways to install the product or to deploy the product. If we move on to slide 16, so this is about the silent profile creation. Again, this is much more typical. And here we'd use the manage profiles command to deploy or create or augment a profile. We provide a comprehensive set of profile creation and augmentation response files in the washome/wsa directory, as you'll see the path listed there. And each file is named according to what it does. So the first example, create DB2 standalone single db.txt. So this is, if it's not already obvious, creates a profile rather than augments a profile. It sets up data sources for DB2. It's a standalone server, and it uses the single database model, which we'll come back to the single versus separate databases style later on. There's also augment MSSQL standalone separate DBs. That augments a profile, sets up Microsoft SQL Server data sources. Again, it's a standalone server, and it uses separate databases. Just another example here. There's augment dmanager.txt. This is the response file you'd use if you were augmenting an existing dmanager profile to turn it into a WSA dmanager profile. So it would be the starting point for your cell if you're using a multi-node deployment. And we'll talk about the single versus separate DBs a little bit later on. So let's move on to slide 17. Thank you. An important note, when you're creating your topology, all your cells need to have unique names. This is really important. You might not notice when you're first installing any problem with having non-unique cell names across your organization, but once you're using operations like promotion that can occur between different cells, between different deployments of WSRR, then it's really important that they have unique names. You can get all sorts of problems with the ability to call remote operations, essentially invoke remote EJBs on different cells if you're not using unique cell names. And you can rename a cell once you've created it by renaming all the individual parts. But that's an operation where you'd need to contact WAS support, and it's much better if you can get it right the first time. So please make sure that you're always using a naming convention that works across your cells when you're creating your topology. Let's move on to slide 18. So standalone users at this point are pretty much ready to go. If they've already created their database, they just need to start up the server and they'll be running with a running system. If not, they'll need to go and create their database. But at that point, they don't have anything else to do. People who've created managed nodes have more work to do. As I said earlier, the creation of a managed profile, so a demanager or a custom node, doesn't deploy the service registry application. It also doesn't deploy the service registry bus, both of which you need for a working system. You can deploy both of them using the integrated solutions console, or the WAS admin console, again, as it's formerly known. And that's, again, that's pretty straightforward. It's a wizard-style installation step, and I won't say that much more about it. Alternatively, if you're doing scripting, then you can use the following scripts, deploy-wizard-bus.python or deploy-wizard-app, and depending on what you're doing. If you're deploying the application, however, so deploy-wizard-app, please make sure that you've already deployed the bus. The application requires that the bus already exists, so you have to run the bus script first. And again, more information on the Info Center as to the parameters that those scripts take. Although I think in a lot of cases, because most people, as I understand it, have access to the Integrated Solutions Console, then that actually is, even on production systems, is available to users who want to deploy the application that way. So I think it's quite rare for people to use the Python scripts that we've got there. But I'm just making you aware, if you want to do a fully scripted install, that they are available. But let's move on to slide 19. This is just a screenshot of my cluster system that I set up. And because I've got a profile, a deployment manager profile that has been augmented with the Wither vManager profile type, then I get this deploy Wither option on my cluster view. So I've got a Wither cluster that I've created, and all of the nodes within that cluster have also had the installation manager install process for Wither run against them. And I can select my cluster and click on the deploy Wither button. And at that stage, it will offer me options as to whether I want to install the service registry application or the service registry bus, or I can install both of them. But it gives me the choice. And it just takes you through a wizard-style process. Everything's configured very much like the WebSphere customization toolbox for creating or augmenting profiles. And it's pretty straightforward. But let's move on to slide 20. The subject of special users is one that can confuse a lot of customers and can trip them up. There's basically two special users that you need to be aware of. And if you're using a standalone install, they're set implicitly during the installation process. What you actually have to do is, when you're doing a standalone install, is you provide an administrative user, and that user automatically gets set as the runners user and the JMS user. And so you never actually see this exposed at the standalone installation process. But once you're installing into a cluster or a federated server, then it becomes much more relevant. So just a quick summary of what they are. There's the runners user, and this is the user who performs actions on behalf of the service registry application. So this is things like when we're starting up, the runners user will be running. And when internal parts of service registry are making EJB calls within the application or externally, then they will be running as the runners user. And also there's the JMS user, and this is simply the user who connects to the service registry bus to provide the JMS messaging functionality that we need. So let's move on to slide 21. So this is more on the runners user. And there's three things that the runners user must be. The first is a WAS administrator. You can ensure that the user is a WAS administrator by going into the Integrated Solutions Console and clicking on Users and Groups and Administrative User Roles. So this is just a user who, through the application server, is an administrative user. Secondly, the runners user must be a J2EE administrator for the service registry application. this is the standard role mappings configuration that that you have to use in J2E app. And simply, the runner's user must be an administrator for the service registry application. Lastly, the runner's user must be in the WSR admin role within the fine-grained access control permissions, which are configured within the WSR configuration perspective of the WSR UI. You must have the runner's user as a WSR admin as well. And by default, the J2EE role and the WSR admin role are configured for all authenticated users. So you, particularly on the standalone install, you get that for free, basically, because everyone who is authenticated is in those roles. But in a production system, you're going to be much tighter than that, and you're going to limit the groups or the roles, the users that are in those particular roles. And when you do that, you need to make sure that whoever you chose for your runner's user is in both the J2EE and the WSR admin roles. So let's move on to slide 22. If you wish to configure the runner's user after you've installed, you can access the setting under the application settings for the service registry application. Under the highlighted user runner's role section there, you click on that, and it gives you the opportunity to enter the credentials of the runner's user, and you only get one option as to which role they're in. They're in the administrator role. We do overload the term administrator quite a lot, because I think I've used it in at least four contexts so far over the last two slides, but you do only have one option for the runner's role. But that's how you get to it and how you edit it. So again, if you're having issues with your runner's user, that's where you need to go. So let's move on to slide 23. The JMS user, defined by an authentication alias called WSR JMS alias. So that's quite straightforward. The user must be in the bus connector role. And again, on a standalone server, this happens for free. But if you are changing that user in any way, or you're doing something like changing your user registry, or even changing the password, you need to make sure that the user is in the bus connector role. And the screenshot below shows how you can check that. You can go to the buses, service registry bus, security for service registry bus section, and it will show you the users that are in the bus connector role. And you'll see there that my WAS admin user is listed, and that's the user that I set up for my WSR JMS alias. And so my JMS messaging will work fine. But again, if I created a new user, or I wanted to change the JMS user, I'd have to come in here and potentially add my new JMS user to the bus connector role for things to work correctly. So we'll go on to slide 24 now. So remember, if you change your user registry or change your J2E role mappings, consider the runners and JMS users. I think I've already really spoken about that. If you change the password for your JMS user, and in fact, if you change the password for the runners user as well, you need to go back and either update the runners user or update the WSR JMS alias to enter a new password for them. They don't automatically get updated just because you've changed your user registry. WSR will not start if you've not configured these correctly. So if you're having problems, particularly if you've been changing user registry settings, changing passwords, check the system out log. I mean, you can always raise a PMR, but it's probably quicker to take a look at the system out, see whether it's reporting issues about the runner's user being not having sufficient credentials, or the JMS user not having sufficient credentials. It might give you a very clear error, because certainly we check for this up front when we're starting up, that both these users are in the right roles, essentially. So it's well worth having a look to see if there's any problems in that area. So let's move on to slide 25. So moving on to the database section now. And the WSR tables are divided into three logical parts. There's the main content, which is the WSR content, the things you're loading into the service registry. There's the activity logging, which is anything that we log once you've got activity logging turned on. And then there's the service registry bus tables, which are where any of the persistent messages that are required for the JMS messaging are stored. The databases or the tables can be created in three separate databases, or they can all be created in the same database. And I'm not really going to talk about the pros and cons of either. It's really whatever your organization, whatever your DBA wants to do. Although I'd say that it's more common to see people using a single database configuration, I think mainly because it's just more straightforward. But you could split that out into the three separate databases if you wanted to. So let's move on to slide 26. The key thing about the WSA database is it must be created with a UTF-8 code page. We check this on startup, and if it's not set, if you're not set to use UTF-8, not set to use a UTF-8 code page, then we will fail startup, and we will report as such. It doesn't matter if you don't plan to load UTF-8 content. If you're only using ASCII documents, then you think it doesn't matter. It really does, and we will check, and we will fail on startup if your database hasn't been created correctly. It's a big cause of install PMRs, so you know I'm trying to draw quite a lot of attention to this. And particularly Oracle users, you must use a character set of AL32 UTF-8 and a national character set of UTF-8. These are both defined in our installation scripts, in the database scripts. But a lot of times, either DBAs or users of the database who are creating them just create a default database that doesn't use both of these settings. And again, they get into trouble and the registry doesn't start. And it's because it's not set up properly to use UTF-8. So particularly Oracle users, please pay attention to this slide. So let's move on to slide 27 now. As I was saying, make sure that you use the scripts provided. I appreciate that people have their own internal preferences for handling how databases are created, but there's all sorts of settings related to indexes and buffer pools and other things which must be followed. And we provide the scripts. We don't dictate how they're run, but we do recommend that everything in them is run appropriately and is set according to what is in the script. If you have questions about what's in there and why it's in there, then by all means raise a PMR to ask. But don't think that you can just create the database in any old fashion just because you feel like it. You must follow what's in the script. And as I say, please use the scripts provided. If you created a standalone server profile, then in fact the scripts get pre-populated with all of the database settings that you've made during the profile creation step, and that's great. That's really easy. You can just take those scripts and hand them to your DBA straight away. But again, in the real world for deployment manager and custom node profiles, you have to edit the scripts manually and replace the placeholders for things like schema name and other settings with the specific information for your database. But there's instructions again on the Info Center on how to do this. So let's move on to slide 28. Just a little bit more on the database scripts, where you can find them. The scripts appear in two places, in fact, on the installation image so that you can send them to your DBA before you've actually installed WSA. But also, after you've installed, they appear under the WSA directory in WAS Home. So you can access them from both of those locations. And let's move on to slide 29. Before you create your database, consider where you're locating it. Consider the data center. Consider the geography. Consider the network. And consider the workload of the server on which you're running the database. WSA is quite sensitive to latency between the application server and the database. So if you've got the two separated by either a long geographical distance or a long latency, or worse, a combination of the two, then you will suffer with performance problems. A large ping time will be significantly magnified if you're running your when you're running WSA. So the interaction between the application server and the database is quite chatty, and so that means that every time there's a request going one way, you encounter a little bit of latency, and that can all add up. So a lot of our problems are related, a lot of our performance problems are related to where the database is situated. So please, if you can try and get both of them in the same data center and both of them relatively close on the network, you will definitely benefit from the performance that will bring. And so on to slide 30. Finally, read the info center. As I said at the beginning, a lot of what I've spoken about today is in the info center, but I'm just trying to bring some of these things out and give you a bit of an overview of the overall concept involved in the install. The info center's got some great information in, but I appreciate it can be somewhat daunting to read, and it's full of details for all of the different installs that you can possibly do. So hopefully, if you go back and look at it now, it'll make a bit more sense, and you'll have a bit of an appreciation of what some of the specific steps are for, which might not have been obvious otherwise. We also, in the Info Center, we link to a comprehensive guide full of for a full production-style silent installation, including business-based configuration, and that's available at the URL listed there. But as I say, it's also in the list of the URL is available in the Info Center, and that's a really good document. It's extremely thorough. It's AIX-based, but to be honest, I think most of the install steps are not really platform-specific. And it goes into detail about pretty much everything that you need to do to get a production system running. So I'd highly recommend you go and look at that and follow the examples listed in there. And so let's move on to slide 31. This is really just a summary of what I've spoken about. Use GNUtar to extract the installation image. Really important. You really can't get started until you've done that properly. Everything you need to install is included on the image, so you don't need to get anything else. But as I said earlier, you might want to install to the latest levels of the various bits of software that we provide. And so for Wuzzer, I explain how you you use the installation, you use the repository entry in the response file to point to the online repositories for the Wuzzer application. And there you can install directly to a particular fixed pack level. Consider your topology before you start. Make sure you know what it is that you're trying to deploy. And like I say, be aware of things like cell names, and be aware of the implications of what that means for your actual installation. What kind of profiles are you going to create? Are you going to be reusing your WAS? Are you going to be creating a new package group with a new WAS install? All those things you need to consider up front. Understand the difference between the IAM install and the profile creation and augmentation. So understand what the IAM install does. It lays down files onto the WAS file system, which will then be used in order to create or augment profiles. And it's the creation and augmentation of profiles which is essentially what allows you to deploy the application. As I said, when you're doing a managed node install, then there's kind of two steps. There's the profile creation and a final step to actually deploy the application. Understand the database structure. Understand the groups of tables involved, the Wuzzer tables, the activity logging tables, and the service registry bus tables. They can all go in the same database together, but you need to be aware that you have that option. And please make sure you're using UTF-8 code pages for or UTF-8 code page for the database. And finally, be aware of the RunAS and JMS users. As I say, with a silent install, you are unlikely to be aware of them. With a managed install, you need to be aware of them, and you particularly need to be aware of them when you change settings, when you change the passwords, and when you change the users in your user registry. So let's move on to slide 32. There's some additional WebSphere product resources links here. I'm not going to read them all out, but I recommend you go and have a look at them. There's also my email address on the front of the presentation, so if you do have questions that are not answered at the end of this presentation or you're listening to the recording, then do feel free to email me with questions. And like I said, if you're interested in a business space presentation, then please let me know and we can see if we can arrange that and go through the steps to install Business Space and deploy that. And with that, I'll hand back to David.
Thank you, Kevin, for a great presentation. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject WSTE Subscribe. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled, or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program even better for you. We welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks again for your participation. At this time, Tanya, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Thank you. At this time, we are ready for the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. To withdraw your question, press star 2. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment. There are no questions on the audio portion.
I do see a few questions in the group chat. The first one is, installation from WSRR 7500 to 7503 Fix Factory, is IM144 sufficient?
I'm not sure on exactly which level of IM you would need, but IM will automatically detect the level. And like I say, the install kit that is provided will update any existing IM to the requisite level.
Okay.
I hope that answers the question.
Okay. And then the next question from the same person. If we are not using business spaces, do I have to upgrade BS widgets?
You wouldn't have to, but obviously you wouldn't be able to use business space at all if you don't update the widgets accordingly. But if you're not using it, then you don't need to do those steps.
Okay, thank you. And what is the best way to compare and sync GEPs?
That is a question which is beyond the scope of this presentation. I think that is quite a complicated question, and there's not a simple, straightforward answer to it. So, happy to take that kind of question offline and talk about the various issues associated with it. But it's a bit beyond the scope of this presentation and my ability to answer sort of on the call right now.
Okay, and yes, I've put slide 1 up in the web conference that has your email address. And then there's another question. What has changed in the installation steps from WSRR 7.5 to 8.0?
Very little. I'm just trying to think whether there's anything particularly noteworthy. I don't think there is really. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anything. The approach was very much the same. Yes, off the top of my head, I can't say that there are any differences between 7.5 and 8. But obviously, this presentation was purely focused on version 8.
Okay, thank you. And then there's a question. We had some performance issues with business space in 7.5. Has that changed with 8.0?
That would depend on the exact performance issues that were being encountered. I believe performance should be slightly improved in version 8, but again, I couldn't sort of talk specifically about a particular customer's problem. Again, by all means, email me with the information, particularly if you've already had a PMR, and we can see whether there have been any improvements that would improve that particular customer's experience in business space.
So at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation and hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Kevin, for presenting today.
Thank you.